The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
It certainly is a big lead. Todd Herman, one more day filling in for Dory. Tomorrow is my last day. Dory retakes the airwaves in his own show. Man, it's good to have you back. How are you feeling?
I'm feeling great. I'm a little intimidated at the idea of doing a full show starting on Monday, but and following in your footsteps. But no, I'm ready to go. I'm kind of going stir crazy, especially because after right knee replacement, especially, you can't drive for a few weeks. And so I'm at the mercy of others to get out of this house. And I'm starting to go stir crazy here, Todd. I got to be honest with you. It's just me and Buddy here, and I'm going nuts.
No, that's really, really, really hard to do, to put up with that. I know there's something, that, though, because this might be part of this stir crazy. You're having kind of a Costco thing, I understand.
Well, yeah, before we get to the big lead, last night Steve Rabel announced that he's going to retire from TV news anchoring, and he's going to join us here in just a couple of minutes. But before we get to that, I just have one quick story. Are you a member of any exclusive clubs, Todd? Any golf clubs?
You know me in golf. No, just I'm a member of the Fill-In for Dory Monson Club, and that's a pretty exclusive
club.
Okay,
that's it. That doesn't cost anything. That's free.
Yeah.
Anybody could do that. Because I was thinking, you know, if I was a member at Sahali and I paid $50,000 or whatever, or the Seattle Golf Club, I wouldn't want some Yahoo with a canvas carry bag walking up next to me on the first tee. I would assume that I've purchased a little bit of exclusivity with all of my money. It's kind of like, you know, I go to Planet Fitness. For that $10 a month, I assume that just keeps all the riffraff out. And so the person next to me on the elliptical isn't going to be some, just some person off the street. So I'm so glad, because the only other club I'm a member of besides Planet Fitness is Costco. And I didn't realize that they allowed, did you know this? They allowed non-members to buy food at the food court at Costco?
Disgusting. It's
outrageous.
Disgusting. I could have gone and bought food there because I was not a member. I could have gone. They didn't tell me.
If I go to get a wiener and a Diet Coke for $1.50, and you know how I love my wieners, I just expect that the person in front or behind me in line has been carefully vetted by the corporate titans at Costco. But now they've announced that they're going to require membership to get into the food court. And I just want to say thank you to the folks at Costco, because I don't have too many areas in my life where I feel exclusivity. And this just makes me happy. It just makes me happy.
Who is trying to find parking at Costco and dealing with all those people just to go in and buy the hot dog? I don't know who's doing that anyway.
Nicole, have you had one of those hot dogs?
Yes, they're delicious. I agree.
It's a giant.
But
you can get a regular, a Polish, $1.50, a soda included. I'd walk on my hands and knees 3 miles for one of those.
I do enjoy them, but man, parking there can be something. And Costco is one of my favorite stores.
Not at lunchtime. It's fine at lunchtime. Anyway, thank you. It's just my word of thanks to the fine folks at Costco. Okay, as we told you about a couple of minutes ago, Steve Rabel announced his retirement on the TV news last night. And he is nice enough to be joining us this afternoon. So up next in the big lead.
The Big Lead, Dory Monson Show exclusive.
Well, I got very excited yesterday when I heard that Steve Rabel was retiring. And then I realized, oh, crap, it's the TV job he's retiring from, not the other stuff. And Steve Rabel joins us here on the Dory Monson Show. Good afternoon, sir.
Oh, good afternoon, Dory. Yeah, you're going to have to wait another decade or so, I hope, before you can plop yourself in that seat up in the press box there in the broadcast booth and call a play-by-play for
nobody
your
ever wants.
I'm not ready to give that up yet.
Nobody ever wants that seat, because nobody ever wants to follow the best of the biz. But okay, but you've been doing the TV thing for 30 years now.
Yeah,
and I've told you the story that when I was a broadcast school student, when I was 17, we had a field trip. We went and saw Seattle Today at King 5. I think you were a 23-year-old second-year player maybe with the Seahawks, and you were co-hosting, and you knew back then in your earliest playing days that you wanted to go into broadcasting, and look at what you've done with it. It's pretty impressive, Steve.
Yeah, well, I don't know about the impressive part, but yeah, I thought I kind of knew back then. I think I was a little older than that. It was like my fifth year or something, but
okay.
I had done a bunch of stuff. You know, you were over at Cairo for a while. You know, you knew Wayne and Pete and all those guys, and they allowed me to kind of hang out and learn, and then ask if I wanted to do some things on radio. And then I remember specifically I was a guest once on a show at King at the time called Seattle Tonight Tonight, and the host's name escapes me right now, as much does, by the way, because it has been almost
right.
40 years.
Yes.
But it was a great experience. I enjoyed it. And so the producer of Seattle Today said, "Hey, our guy is going away for like 2 weeks. Do you want to co-host the show?" And I said, "Well, I've not done anything like that, but I'd like to give it a shot." And so Sharon and I got married on June 27th of 1981, and that's a Saturday. And on June 29th, I was at the King Studios for 2 weeks doing Seattle Today. And that was kind of one of the starts to the TV side of things, that I decided then that I really enjoyed it. But as I got into it a little bit, and then once I retired and got into the business, I found that I really enjoyed the news part of it probably more than the sports.
Well, and we should stress that this is not some parting benediction, because what you announced last night is you are going to step aside sometime this spring. So you're still
right.
A few months away from that final broadcast. What I find fascinating, though, Steve, and I really do admire the career that you've built, because, I mean, you have succeeded at the highest level in the NFL, in football, and playing in the NFL, and then in broadcasting. You replaced Wayne Coady doing the sports, and that is, I mean, that's about as big a set of shoes for people who have been here for as long as you and I have and know a little bit about Seattle broadcasting to step in for Wayne Coady. That's about as big a deal as you could have, and it's also a real challenging thing, and you were able to do that.
Well, I will say this until I'm blue in the face, and I've said it. I know I've told you this, and I've told anybody who would listen, that the opportunities I was given, and I mean, I talk about being blessed and getting these chances to do these sorts of things, and given the chance to then learn kind of on the job. I learned a lot from Pete and from Wayne, and from all the guys that I worked with, you know, Gary Spinell and Gary Justice and Susan Hutchison and all those guys. I'm a sponge, and I learn from those people. I think what I learned most from Wayne is that regardless of all of the other things, regardless of the facts, regardless of you know, situations and games, what's important is you are letting the fans know, if it's on radio or television, that this is fun. You're having a great time, and you want them to be a part of it. And it really is that simple. And that's what Wayne did. Wayne never let the facts of anything get in the way of a good story, as you know. and so it was for him, it was all about the show, and he just happened to be the best at it that I'd ever seen. A guy who can walk on a set and do 6 minutes of sports without a script, even though he had scripts. He never looked down at them, and he was just terrific doing it.
And then you decided, and you mentioned this just a couple of minutes ago, that you thought your interests might be beyond sports. And, you know, I had to make that decision 25 years ago because I was doing sports and wanted to do more of news talk. And, you know, Eric Johnson at Channel 4 was the sports guy and is just a fantastic news anchor now. There seems to be something about graduating from sports and just the spontaneity of everything that's involved in doing sports that makes people, and I think you and Eric are just as good as they come, that makes people very, very good at doing news, and especially breaking news, because you know how to speak, you know how to talk on the fly, and I think that transition that a lot of people kind of look down their nose at decades ago. I think that now it's just it's just if you're a talented broadcaster, you can do that.
Yeah, I and thanks for bringing that up, Dory, because I think that really is a big deal. That certainly was my thinking in the career. I enjoyed doing sports, and I remember I was covering the Rose Bowl in Pasadena. It was like 92 or something, and I got a call from the news director and said, we're going to kind of change what we're doing a little bit. It's when we went to that out-of-the-box routine. But they said, we feel like you are the best position to be able to make that transition. And I said, well, great. I can do it in sports. And by that time, I was also doing the noon news with Susan Hutchison over at Cairo. And they said, no, we want you full-time news. You're not going to be doing sports anymore. And I thought, holy smokes. And it took me about 30 seconds to say, okay, let's go. And it just opened up so many more avenues, yes, but it opened my eyes up to how to prepare. And, we both know this. As athletes, you prepare certain ways. And then when I was getting ready to broadcast football games, you prepare. But to do newscasts and to understand your community and to be able to talk every day about the important issues. And okay, yeah, I get it sometimes. And people say, you guys are nothing but, shootings and all that. No, we're a lot more than that. And you just, some days are tougher days than others, I guarantee you. But it's really important information that people, I think, want in their lives. And I thought I could do more in this community and be of greater service on that side of the desk. And so that's why we made that move. And again, Cairo gave me the opportunity to kind of learn on the job. And I learned from Gary and Susan and John Marler and Aaron Brown. I mean, these are real pros. And then watching the guys across the street, Gene oh my gosh, I've just been, as I said, I've been blessed. I've been lucky. You're right. I'm going to be around for another couple of months. But around the end of May, we're going to call it a career and let somebody else do it. I mean, now, I think you would agree, Dory, this is becoming a young person's game, and maybe all games are young person's game, but this one especially. And it's time. Monique Minglavin, my co-anchor, is the best in the business, and she deserves somebody that doesn't look like her great-granddad.
Yeah, but once you shaved that mustache, I thought that was supposed to take care of all of those issues.
But then all the other stuff happened, too. The face fell, the hair got gray. I'm amazed what happens. I was a young buck of 25, and all of a sudden here I am. I'll be 66 my next birthday, and I'm talking about where the cream of wheat is in the cupboard.
And I'm sitting at home recovering from knee replacement, talking to you. This is a fascinating conversation for my younger demographics. So you just feel like, you said it's a young person's game, because I know the passion you still have, and I've always been impressed. You will do play-by-play of a preseason home game, which, it will end at 8 or 9 o'clock, and then you go straight to the studio and do the 11 o'clock news. So you obviously still have passion for this.
I do, but I'm also realistic, and I understand that, for 25, 28 years when I had both jobs, news and especially since doing play-by-play, which for me has been, more preparation than the analyst job, for obvious reasons. But I've noticed that, in the last 5 years or so, it gets tougher to get up on Monday morning. You fly in from Philadelphia after a Sunday night game and you get in at 6, and then you're up and back at the station this fall, I got off the 11 o'clock, which really helped. I thank my general manager and our news director, John Laporte, said, hey, we'll do it. We'll let you off that 11 and make your life a little easier. And that meant a lot to me. And it meant that I could spend more time here at home. And, I'm the only thing I've done longer than work at Cairo has been married. And I've been married now for almost 39 years to my bride, Sharon. I've spent a lot of evenings eating out of Tupperware or coming home, grabbing a quick dinner and running back to the station to do the 11 and getting home at midnight, a lot of years. And it was just, it just seemed like it was sort of time. We have some things we want to do while we can still do it and travel. And we've got a brand new grand niece up in Bellingham. We want to go see her and visit with my family back east. So there's lots of things we want to do and can do and look forward to doing. We'll still do Seahawks football. You'll like this. So we were preparing this statement that I made yesterday on the air. And in there, I said, you know, I'll continue on doing, you know, Seahawks football. And then it dawned on me, maybe I better call somebody at the Seahawks just to make sure that I'm not, you know, that I'm not missing something here. So I called Brian O'Connell, our producer and the director of broadcasting for the Hawks, and he said, "Oh yeah, yeah, you can. Yes, you're still here. Don't worry about that." So I, you know, I'll keep doing that, and I'll do some things for Cairo. I mean, I'm not just, you know, we're not gonna, you know, get into a raft and head off to some deserted island somewhere. We're gonna stay right here. We're gonna stay involved in charity. All of the events that we do, we're going to keep doing those things. Be involved with the Seahawks, maybe a little more, in fact, because I'll have a little more time. But then we'll be, Sharon and I will be able to do the things that we want to do, and we can come down and heckle you at the station.
That would be lovely. I would welcome you anytime to heckle me. So, well, it's okay. Very, very well earned, this, and like I said, it's not going to happen for a few more months, but it's very well earned, and you know how highly I think of you, and I'm going to be thrilled that we're going to still be working together for the foreseeable future. I might have to make a call to find out if I'm still in, too, but
I thought about it yesterday. I'd never assume anything, so I just decided to make that call. You know, we're okay with this, ain't we, guys? And they said, yeah. So, you know, if I were you, Dory, I would call just to check.
Make a call, okay?
I think we'll have great fun. Hey, buddy, we could have this the way this season ended, the way this young team grew up. Gosh, we could really be having some great fun next season.
Yeah, well, if the analogies that everyone was making to 2012 this last year, if that can continue down the same path, this could be a really fun year ahead. You're right about that.
You bet. You bet.
All right, Steve. Well, you know what a fan I am. Congratulations on the impending TV retirement, and I appreciate you jumping on with me this afternoon.
Dory, my pleasure. Good luck. Get well soon, and if I don't see you beforehand, we'll see you over at the stadium.
You got it. All right. Thank you, man. Steve Rabel joining us, and that is your Big Lead this hour.
The Big Lead on Cairo Radio.
My thanks to Steve Rabel, and coming up next, I'm going to stick around. Todd Herman and I, we both have some stuff in the news that we want to continue to kick around on this beautiful Thursday afternoon as the Dory Monson Show rolls on.
Todd Herman in for Dory Monson with Dory Monson on the Dory Monson Show. Dory continues to recover from knee replacement surgery, but you are here, which means, and everybody hear me on this, okay? I'm saying this for a purpose, that Dory, if you, I know you don't use it, but if you decide to use some marijuana, apparently Bernie Sanders knows exactly who should sell it to you.
You know, we didn't get to this when we did our debate wrap-up yesterday, Todd, but as I was watching the debate night before last, I thought that this was one of the most shocking things. What was the phrase you used a day or two ago, Todd, about the bigotry of low expectations? Is that right? Is that the phrase you like?
Soft bigotry of low expectations, exactly.
There you go. The soft bigotry of low expectations. And so when Bernie Sanders, and you know, one of the things that the Democrats are trying to do is keep the black vote as high as it's been in years past. And it's getting tougher and tougher because the black unemployment rate is at an all-time low and job growth wage growth has been increasing for African Americans in the United States under Donald Trump. And so economically, things are going really well for black Americans. And so the pandering, you know, I saw Biden, he had that media event a few days ago, and the big sign on the podium, Blacks for Biden, which just sounds unbelievably pandering to me. But then you had Bernie Sanders during the debate, and he talked about how he's not going to just give African Americans minimum wage jobs, but he's going to make them business owners. But he's got one particular line of business in mind for them.
We have a criminal justice system today that is not only broken, it is racist. And I'll tell you what else we're going to do. We're going to provide help to the African-American, Latino, Native American community to start businesses to sell legal marijuana rather than let a few corporations control the legalized marijuana market.
Wow. I mean, that just sounds so... I mean, why wouldn't we aspire, if we're going to help the black and brown and Native American communities, why wouldn't we aspire to helping them own engineering firms or getting a mod pizza franchise or running any kind of a business? But for him to just assume that that's what's going to have the appeal, that we're going to allow them to legally sell drugs, that is as racist gets right there. Or am I missing something here?
No, as a matter of fact, I mean, just imagine putting those words into Donald Trump's mouth. And I guarantee
oh, man,
the media would flip. And there's a reason that Fox News has had its highest ratings in its history. Because so many people are so fed up with the ultimate bias from the news media. I talked about soft bigotry with low expectations. Here's another phrase I use, Dory. It's the propaganda of silence. The media is not going to report the angle on this that they would with Trump. So there's a lot of people, and they only know about this clip, Dory. They either watch the debates or they listen to your show. It's not going to make it into the mainstream news vernacular. It's the propaganda of silence. And it makes us seem crazy when we go and say, you hear Bernie Sanders thinks black people and brown people, they just deal drugs. People could say, oh, yeah, you're crazy.
You're making such a great point. You are right. If Donald Trump said those exact same words, it would be the graphic banner for at least 24 hours on both CNN and MSNBC, with them having a studio panel talking about how abjectly racist he is. But while Donald Trump is actually improving the lives of black Americans by getting people of all colors, you know, all Americans, by getting all people off of welfare, getting them into jobs so you can start to control your own life and get off of government control. And if Trump said we're going to help black and brown people sell weed legally, it's unbelievable. It's unbelievable.
Dory, imagine the sprinting. The you would have fistfights and clawing and biting in a contest between Pramila Jayapal and others to get to a microphone to call him a racist. And I can hear it in my mind. I can see Anderson Cooper's face as he's talking to someone, you know, a Democrat, saying, so I guess his point of view is black Americans and Hispanic Americans, they just want to sell drugs. I can see him cocking his eyebrow and looking at his guest. And the media just they here's another thing. And this is also debate stuff. And we talked about this the other day, Dory, that it's sad. And I don't think either of us are enjoying watching Joe Biden demonstrate the fact that he's losing his mind. So here is Joe Biden celebrating a great victory where he pushed the climate accord forward with the dictator of China, who actually died not in 2016 or 17. He died in like 1997. Here's Joe Biden.
And folks, one of the things I'm proudest of is getting past, getting moved, getting control of the Paris Climate Accord. I'm the guy that came back after meeting with Deng Xiaoping and making the case that I believe China would join if we put pressure on them. We got almost 200 nations to join.
Man died in 1997. Yeah. And Dory,
he died 19 years before that agreement was made.
How many 25th Amendment arguments, that is, a president is mentally unfit to serve or physically unfit to serve, have we heard about Donald Trump, who has a crisp, crisp intelligence, in my judgment? And again, the media on this, I haven't seen a single reports on mainstream media questioning the mental viability of Joe Biden.
Yeah, well, you know, it was like last month I had Dwight David Eisenhower on my show, and we were talking about the expectations that we should have for presidents. And never mind. Never mind. No, it's forget it. No, you're absolutely right. That what they accuse Trump of is what they seem to be most guilty of, and that's addled minds and racism and all of the other things that are making the party, the Democrat Party, realize that they are in some dire straits going into this November election.
Dory Monson, thanks for joining your show.
Let's do it one more time tomorrow, and then I'll see if I can gear up to do the entire show on Monday without you. I'm going to miss you.
Absolutely.
On Monday. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it. And close the show strong, okay? We got to provide a great lead-in for Tom and Curly this afternoon, all right?
We'll do. Todd Herman filling in for Dory with Dory on Car Radio. Continuing to fill in for Dory Monson. One more day to go before Dory's back. He's recovering from knee replacement surgery. So Monday, the big show with the big host is back. You know, I wrap the show oftentimes by sharing a little bit about me. And the reason I do that is you're so kind to put up with me for 3 hours. I always feel like there should be a trade that we talk about news, we talk about opinion, etc. I think for hosts, you should know a little bit about us and our background. And one of the things I've shared with people that I think can help inform folks who maybe aren't as conservative as I am or not conservative at all is, how did I get here? Like, why do I have the point of view that I do in regards to government? And have you ever thought about why you have it? Because, you know, some people are ethnically liberal, ethnically conservative, meaning that's just how they were raised. But they haven't sometimes really thought about the process that got them there. Because like I said, sometimes it's inserted into you. It's like, you know, people who will say, oh, I'm ethnically Jewish, but I don't practice. You know what I'm saying? And there are ethnic Christians, et cetera. And I know that's a misapplication of a phrase, ethnic. I understand that. But it is an analogy or metaphor, as you get it. So here's like the moment I became conservative. There are two moments that one caused me to begin thinking that way. One cemented it. Both of them happened in grade school. So first incident was this. I went to grade school in Spokane in the Valley. I went to a brand new grade school that had this stupid design. It was an open concept school. There were like literally no walls inside. And it was designed so that you, even as a kindergarten kid, you didn't really do anything. I legitimately mean this. It is they by sixth grade, here was our day. You would go into school. You would go get Dittos. Remember Dittos? Those handouts? You would go get those. You would do that for the first 2 hours of the day, was just filling out papers. And if you got done, you had free time. So funny thing, my friend Eric and I always got done and we'd go listen to rock music. We didn't care. They're Dittos. There's no teaching. So it was this sort of school. In any case, so in this second grade, I remember this to the day I die. I was out playing trucks with my friend Cameron. So remember when truckers were a big deal when I was growing up? They were a big deal, like 1974, 1973, huge. Everybody, like, there's lots of shows where truckers saved the world. And why wouldn't they? Truckers do save the world. So I'm out playing in the play yard. It was cold. I remember the principal came and got me as I was walking into the school from recess, and he said, come with me. So I walked down to his office. I'm a little kid. I'm second grade, I think. And I walked down to his office. He sits me down in the chair across from him in his big desk. And he says, empty your pockets. And so I had my coat. I go, why? He goes, I want to see what's in your pockets. Empty your pockets. So I reached into my pockets and I emptied my pockets. And there were some crayons in my pockets. And he said, okay, that's it. You're in big trouble. I said, why? For having crayons? And he said, no, because Anne Marie saw you drawing on the side of the school. And I told him, I didn't do that. The entire recess, I was playing trucks. Go get Cameron. Ask Cameron. He goes, I'm not going to go get your friend. You're in trouble. Anne-Marie saw you. Stay here. Now, here's the thing. Anne-Marie was a kid, and I remember her. She was a rich kid. She was a kid who liked to cause a little bit of trouble. She was a kid. I have nothing against Anne-Marie. And I was not a rich kid. I did not comb my hair when I went to school, but I wasn't at this point anti-school. In fact, I was a kid who used to volunteer to do extra work at school, legitimately. Like in second grade, I read a report I voluntarily wrote about the Native American tribes in our area because my dad was really, really interested in them. And I said, hey, I want to read this report. They let me do that. That's the kind of kid I was. This principal, he makes this pronouncement, gets up and walks out. So I'm sitting there and I think, screw you. I left. I left school. I walked out the front door across the street. In my little kid's brain, it seemed like I would hide. Right. So I did. I laid down in the alfalfa field. The alfalfa was thick, you know, starting to warm up. So it was no longer chilly. I could stay there forever. Well, in my mind, I thought I'd stayed there forever. And I stood up and I started walking home. Now, my brilliant plan was to go home because who would ever think of that? What principal would ever think, oh, he's probably going home? I crossed the main street, walked down my street, and I'm headed to my home. And the guy pulls up, the principal, in his LTD. And now it's like legitimately a warm day. And I can feel the sweat, you know, pouring. I see the principal and he's in a Jim Rockford leisure suit, like a brown suit. And he stops his car, opens the door, comes running and picks me up. And I'm screaming at him like, put me down. And then I looked and there was my neighbor who happened to be a Cuban immigrant. Her dad was legitimately imprisoned by Castro. She was out at this point tanning. It had gotten so warm. And so Carmen sees this and she starts yelling, I do. And it's, oh God. She thinks I'm being kidnapped. So he takes me back to the school and he like shoves me into the seat and he says, now you're really in trouble and you're going to admit what you did. And I looked at him and said, I did nothing. And he said, well, I'm calling your mom. And I said, call her. But I'm going to tell you right now, my dad's going to beat you up for what you did. I didn't do anything. And he wouldn't have it. So he said to me, if you leave this room, you're in real trouble. I said, you better lock the door. Right. And I had choice words for him. That moment, my opinion of school changed forever. I became someone who just realized that this guy has way too much authority. That was it. That was the moment I began to distrust government, because even then I understood this is a government employee. He had no proof I did anything because I didn't. And it was that moment that I was born as a conservative. I don't have time to get into the other incident. It happened at the same school. But I looked and I said, when one person has this much power to do something this ridiculous, then I never want government to be in power. That's how I became twisted and bitter. The beginning. All right, Todd Herman in for Dory Monson. Tom and Curly up next on Cairo Radio.